Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Doug hates candy wrappers, screaming baby sticky seats with 50 ads and popcorn kernels in his teeth. There's still not one that he won't see, because Doug loves movies.
Hey, 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 everybody. My name is Doug, and I love Wayne. This is Doug Loves Movies, coming to you from the United States of waiting to get a vaccine with another Homes Alone edition. It's Thursday, December 10th, 2020, and I'm so excited about today's guests because they are the creator and two of the stars of one of my all-time favorite TV shows that I just discovered, thanks to Prime Video. Sean Simmons, Stephen Kiernan, and Mike O'Malley from Wayne. Woo. Hello, guys.
What's going on, man?
Oh, you know. I'm so excited to have you all here. Let's meet you individually and alphabetically, starting with the man who plays Sergeant Stephen Geller on Wayne. It's Stephen Kiernan. Hey, dude.
Hey, dude. Nice to meet you. Thanks for having us.
Meet you. Thank you for being here. People love you and your character on this show, but a lot of the chatter is about, like, where has this guy been? He's so amazing. And what the people don't realize is that they've been hearing you for all the time, because your voice is, you've done so much voiceover stuff. Like, you're a voice in the, I've never played The Sims, but you're in The Sims?
Yeah. I helped create that language they speak, Simlish. So I was brought in to help develop that. And I had no idea at the time that it would turn into what The Sims has become. I don't think anyone did. So yeah, that was sort of where I sort of launched my voice career, you could say. And yeah, that was really wild because it all was improvised and gibberish. So a nonsensical language kind of put me on the radar, I guess.
Yeah, like people think your voice sounds familiar, but they probably have a hard time placing it.
Yeah, that's totally true. Yeah.
And then you're in all of the complete Kung Fu Panda trilogy.
Yes, that's right. In
so
one form or another.
Everybody with kids has heard you plenty. And
yeah,
I've never seen it. Apologies for never seeing it, but you were also Principal Mitchell on Kirby Buckets.
Yes, that's where I met Sean, and yes, I played the evil Principal Mitchell for 3 seasons on Disney, and again, that's where I met Sean, and he cryptically said to me, "I'll see you again," when he walked away from craft services one day. And I thought that's just what we say, you know, in this town. But he was, yeah, thank God he meant it. So here we are.
Yeah, he was absolutely the one of the only things that kept me going to work every day, writing jokes for Steven as this kind of principal that we thought it was funny. He would have really long hair and he was like secretly a metal guy, but he talked just like Steven or Sergeant Geller. So I actually wrote the part in Wayne for Steven specifically.
Well, that's awesome that you did, because he's immediately I'm talking about you like you're not here, Steven, but immediately so entertaining a character, which, you know, and you don't even know when you first see him that how much he's going to be around on the show. That's one thing I love about the show, is even the characters just wander in for like one scene are all so well written and performed. It all feels very lived in. Unlike just, you know, guest actors showing up and, you know, spouting a few lines and moving on, you know?
Yeah, that's always, you know, kind of a thing I think about. Like, even if you think about, there's a scene where, you know, a waitress works at a bus station and she, you know, her coworker says something about someone who's on break and they're doing their meditating and they're not done. And to me, that's the small story about a character you don't even see. So I think I'd try to do that with everyone, you know, like have some sort of humanity to him that tells you a little story about him, even if they're not even there.
I just finally watched, you know, because once I started loving the show, I started slowing down the pace at which I watched the episodes, because I really didn't want it to end. And so, but I knew I was doing this today. So I finally pulled the trigger on watching the 10th episode of season one. And there's even a character introduced in that episode. It's like the show is, you know, coming to the end of a season and you still introduce a few interesting characters, you know, even in that last one. So it really continues to feel like all the other episodes. And I might as well just jump right to it, Sean. What's going on with a potential season two?
Well, I, you know, these services, at least, you know, there's a few of them out there. They don't really share metrics. But the little talks that we're hearing about behind the scenes between the studio and the network are positive. It feels like, you know, it's breaking through. You know, and that's especially exciting considering that we just kind of threw up a trailer and we had a couple teasers, and that's all a lot of these places do anymore, you know, and then they throw the show on and kind of go, we'll see. So it does feel like it's breaking through in a way that, you know, I don't know what our chances are, but it seems like there's positive talks going back and forth, people asking about, you know, the right questions about budget and things like that. So don't know yet. I think we're close to having an answer one way or the other. And that's crazy, because this, you know, this kind of thing going from one network to the other, and having, you know, another chance.
Yeah. And you ended the one season that exists ends in a way that like gets the viewer very pumped up for what is going to happen next, you know, season two, which is kind of the tradition, even though shows end up getting, you know, canceled after that, you know, after that final episode of the first season. So they just sort of, the show's sort of left dangling. So I think it's very perfect the way it is, but I'm very excited about the idea of getting more, because you definitely left the door wide open.
Yeah. I mean, we were, you know, I was writing about how I got word that the network was dying on a phone call about a month before Wayne aired the first time, which was very nice, as I was going into an Emerson College screening and getting ready for my first, you know, series that I spent, you know, a very long time developing. But yeah, you know, the network was kind of canceled out from under us. And a lot of credit to them. I mean, Dustin Davis and Amanda Barclay and Suzanne Daniels over there, like, you know, they have Cobra Kai, which is something of a mega hit, it seems like, over at Netflix. That was a YouTube show. They made a bunch of good shit. It just, you know, they decided they just didn't want to try to do what they were doing, like a lot of these new kind of streamers, like Verizon 360 and things like that. But yeah, so yeah, they actually had taken that cliffhanger out at one point. And the network had me put it back in. So that was all the more frustrating.
I mean, it's a good ending if you don't get to make more, because it does kind of, you know, you can kind of imagine a future for the characters, you know, yourself and what might happen next. But I definitely, you know, I'm very much hoping for more. And I assume a character that will be also continuing on his journey with his new dog friends is played by Mike O'Malley. Hey, Mike. Mike?
Sorry, it's my first time on Zoom. I didn't know that you did. Hey, Doug, thanks for having us on, man. It's great to be on with you and for you to talk to your followers and fans about this show. I love doing it. I love that this show is having its life on Amazon, and I loved working with Steven and Sean and everybody. I really did.
Well, you play Principal Tom Cole on Wayne, and I was so psyched when you showed up because, you know, I go way back with you.
Yes.
Like, I worked at the WB network when you had some shows there.
Yes.
They hired comedians to write their promos because they had, you know, they had some comedies they wanted to promote.
Life with Roger. I think it was 1996.
Yeah, Life with Roger, and then the Mike O'Malley show.
Yes, that was a miniseries on NBC. It was a 2-episode miniseries that we did in 99. That was
Yes, Dear, where I had the privilege of showing up and saying a few lines as a character that probably didn't feel as lived in as all the people on Wayne.
A buckaroo waiter.
Yeah, I was the buckaroo waiter. And you were, I got to deliver the death blow to you. I got to give you the bad news that you thought it was bottomless. What was it? French fries? It was bottomless something day, thought. And so you ordered a lot of something. And then I had to give you the bad news that you were there on the wrong day.
Yeah, there's no refills on the French fries on that day.
Yeah. And I just also want to do a quick shout out to you playing Nikki Augustine on Justified.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you so much. That was awesome. You know, getting to play a bad guy after doing so much, you know, comedy for such a long part of my career. And then, you know, it's as Steven is talking about with his relationship with Sean. And I think it's so important, you know, when I'm talking to younger people to remind them, you know, Sean's talking about going into Emerson College and having a screening and talking about making shows. And, you know, sometimes as actors, we want to be able to do everything. You know, we're inspired by the great actors and we want to be able to have the full range of things. And then you get started and you know, you're making a living, you're doing something, you're doing this job, you're doing that job. And it's so much about relationships, the relationships that you make and how you invest yourself with a work ethic and a great spirit when you're working with people, you don't even realize how those dividends are going to pay off. You know, obviously they pay off just in the making of the thing. It's a joyful experience. But what brought me to this project was I had worked with a guy named Ian McDonald who had directed on an episode of a show that I was writing. And when they were shooting this up in Toronto, he called me up and he said, look, I'm directing this show. It's really great. Take a look at it. And I read it and I immediately just, you know, responded so much to Sean's voice. And I was like, yeah, how can I be a part of it? And it was just I'm trying to remember, Sean, was it just a pilot? Or was the whole series picked up?
It was just a pilot.
Yeah.
And you just wanted to do the accent, you know, you had it down. That's all you want. You know you have it.
Well, I was born in Boston and I grew up in Nashua, New Hampshire, but our high school, the local Nashua High School in New Hampshire, we would play Brockton, the Brockton Boxers, every year. And that was like playing the big bad city team from Boston, on the outskirts of Boston. So anyways, but I loved Sean's writing and I was like, how can I be a part of this? And that's how I got involved.
And then we proceeded to sit at Craft Services where I forget I'm the boss and do an accent. Me and him only spoke in Boston accents for 3-4 hours at a time. And I can't imagine how annoying it was to everybody sitting around us.
Yeah. You don't realize that you have the accent until you leave. And then people say, oh, you have a Boston accent. And you're like, well, you know, you think you lost it a little bit, but then you say certain words and they catch you.
Oh, I can't. There's certain words I still can't say, like weird. Like I still say weird. I still can't say drawer. Like it's a struggle for me to say drawer.
Draw. I say draw.
Open the draw.
Yeah. Or you say go to your room. Go up to your room. or you say, hey guys, we're losing the light. We got to hurry.
Doppler-ada.
Yeah, but please.
That's how I teach people the accent.
Sean, share with everybody the most Boston line of all that your mother said on the phone.
I was talking to my mother and she was complaining that my dad, you know, I get it. Cause you get to a certain age and you have your 10 meals, you know, that you make and you've given up otherwise. And you have these combos and you serve them 5 days in a row. And then the next week you might have 5 more. It just might be the same. So my mother was complaining on the phone to me. She goes, apparently your father doesn't like corn on the cob anymore. And there's never been a more perfect collection of words too.
It's so fantastic. So I guess
that's Sean Simmons with the corn on the cob and creator, showrunner. I always just tell people, especially with this show, I just say, well, it's violent, but that aside, I don't think you need to know anything else going into it because it just, I feel like it just hooks you in pretty quickly. But what do you, for the uninitiated, for the people who haven't watched yet, and I'm mad at all of them, everybody needs to watch it. But if you're talking to somebody, I'm sure you did a lot of, you know, press for the show. Like, how do you describe it?
A thing that always kind of was a hit with the other producers that they wanted me to drop a lot was John Wick meets John Hughes, which that kind of rang the bell. But it's about, you know, two kids from kind of desperate backgrounds in a town, you know, like I grew up in Brockton, Massachusetts, who go from Brockton to Florida on a dirt bike to get back the shit hot 79 Trans Am that was stolen from this kid's dad before he died. And you know, it's a really, I always say that, you know, we're all working with the same ingredients. It's just kind of like how you're using the measurements. And Wayne just has a really fucked up, you know, usage of measurements. You know, there's a lot more of this and a lot more of that and less of what we usually see. I think that's what makes it kind of weird because it's, you know, it's as if, you know, young, I sometimes would say, Richard Linklater does young Dirty Harry. And that's because it was inspired. It's as much Before Sunset weirdly as it is Death Wish, you know, it's as much, you know, a story about two kids and a very, you know, innocent, sweet romance as it is influenced by, you know, the Chainsaw stuff was Evil Dead, you know, Evil Dead 2 was shouting out to that. But I think the, you know, John Wick, as young John Wick is done by John Hughes, kind of sums it up. But there's a lot of romance. There's a little bit of violence. There's a little bit of action. And, but it's more, I think, absurdist comedy and heart than anything.
Yeah. And, you know, just great characters and just the dialogue and the situations is always, you know, surprising and fun all the way up till the very last episode. And there's also for a half hour comedy, you also don't expect to be delighted by something because it's like a reference to something that happened several episodes before, but then also it's not laid on real thick, you know, it's got subtlety to it.
And I also hear a lot of, you know, you read a lot of these reviews. It turns out that, you remember Amazon was like all about letting the fans vote on what got picked up. You remember it started that way, which was such a strange thing. It would be like people would vote on the shows that get picked up and didn't. And it turns out that is still kind of like a part of it. Not a ton, but they still really go online and consider the reviews to pick up in picking up the show, which is such a strange thing that makes them very specific. But somebody on one of those reviews recently wrote, "I don't know if this is the funniest drama or the saddest comedy," which I loved.
Yeah, that does sum it up pretty well. And that's what we should tell people to do who are listening and like the show, is that they should definitely take advantage of the review function on Amazon Prime and get in there and give the show a good review, or, you know, at least give it, you know, the maximum number of stars.
My mother reads all of them.
Yeah, I think that really matters. That's 100%.
I wanted to ask you, Sean, about Mark McKenna, who plays Wayne, because I didn't figure it out until several episodes in that that's the hilarious kid from the movie Sing Street.
Yeah, I love that movie.
I'm a big fan of Sing Street. So like when I finally, you know, put it together, because I looked him up on IMDb, because as soon as you look him up on IMDb, there's pictures of him looking like the character from Sing Street, and I had not put it together. He's incredible, but also I think I saw somewhere you saying that the Boston accent was easier for him than say an American actor.
Yeah, it became, you know, in casting both of the two leads, you know, it was tough. It's weird because most people have a hard time kind of, you know, that accent's hard, number one, but, you know, even people from Boston that we got would overdo it. And I find myself doing it too. You're like trying to just do the accent, but you end up completely overdoing it. You see Boston actors doing that in really big movies like The Departed. You're like, you're from there, and now you're just like too big. But yeah, you realize, you know, it's something I didn't realize about Bostonians. It's such a quick, easy thing to figure out, but I didn't put two and two together that it was just, the accent is just Irish and English, you know, like it's because, you know, that's who settled there. That's how everybody sounded. And it still hasn't drained away. But so getting Irish people or English people, those auditions, as far as accents went, were always the best, always the best. I love Sing Street, and I always pictured Wayne is kind of, he was written originally as kind of a big, bigger than everybody else, shaved head, little heavy. I think someone called him the fat shit in a certain, you know, script. But as it went on, you know, I saw Mark, I loved Sing Street. I said, somebody had suggested the lead. And I said, what about that kid with the glasses who, you know, really stands out in that movie. The minute he comes on screen, he's such a weird, fun character. And so we saw him, and I started to figure out that, you know, I was worried about how good looking Mark is at first, because he's a real outcast, obviously. And then I started to get my brain around this idea that, and I know some of these kids, people who have alienated themselves because of their behavior, no matter how good looking they are, you know, they're so fucked up and done such fucked up shit that everyone stays away from them, or they just stay away from everybody. And this kind of strange Napoleon Dynamite-y version of Wayne kind of came into focus as Mark did better and better in auditions and eventually met Sierra, and you just couldn't deny the chemistry between the two.
Did you see anybody for Wayne or for Dell who was actually that age, or were you basically going to in the position where you needed to cast an adult to play younger?
Well, he was, I think he was 20 at the time, 19 at the time, and he was playing a 16-year-old. Mm-hmm. Sierra, I don't know if you've seen her lately. It's still, well, she still looks 14, 15 years old. She's 22, but she has just one of those faces, which is a real relief when you're about to hopefully get season two. But then again, we've all seen Jesse Pinkman in the Breaking Bad movie. You know, nobody thought about it. He's like, you know, 20 pounds heavier and, you know, 10 years older. And playing what, an hour later from the end of the Breaking Bad series, you know? But yeah, one thing was that it becomes really, really, you know this, you're asking the question because you know this, difficult production-wise when you have a kid that young in the hours thing. So that was definitely a struggle because one of the kids that was up for it, who just based on seeing film of him, I thought he was going to be cast, but he was like 16, 17 years old. And the, you know, the line producer was like, you can't fucking cast him. Like, he was so angry, but we still saw him. And then Mark, you know, he does, you know, he definitely looks older than 16, I think, in the show, but luckily right now he still looks pretty young. So we're okay. But yeah, it was partly production, partly it was just the guy. We saw so many people. We saw so many people, and it turns out it was a hard thing to play.
The reviews on have you directed your mother to the IMDb site and their review section?
Yeah, because Doug, I've had 2 years to obsess over the show.
It's Doug. But the reviews on IMDb are, every single one that I looked at was just ecstatic and just in absolute love with the show. And, you know, in those IMDb reviews, people just, you know, they give everything one star and just tear it to shit, you know? So it's really impressive how I could just picture a lot of Waynes out there sitting there finding the show and then, you know, finding somewhere on the internet to write about it. Inspired by it, you know?
Yeah, the reviews on both Amazon and IMDb, and, you know, we didn't get many reviews because we're a YouTube show. Legit reviews, but we have, you know, a handful on there, Rotten Tomatoes, and, you know, they've always been, you know, I heard a conversation with marketing where there was almost a fear, like, in not picking up the show because it sounded like they're scared of that audience after reading reviews and stuff because they're so passionate. That they didn't want the blowback or something like I'm not. So there's certain things they did not do in case they couldn't pick it up because there's a really passionate group of Wayne fans out there that do not hold back in their, you know, writing those reviews, which is really nice.
Well, I hope to get a lot more fans for the show just for, you know, my own sake, because I really want more, but this is Doug Loves Movies, of course. So before we get into the game portion of the show, I just wanted to ask each of you, we'll start with Steven. Have you seen any movies lately that you would recommend?
I'm laughing because I haven't seen any current movies, but the other night we were trimming the tree watching To Catch a Thief. And I know it may not be the answer you were looking for.
Of course.
But right, of course, as I did have a glass of tea. But I just want to say I would point everyone to watch To Catch a Thief. And for those who don't know that movie, it's just, for me, it was just absolutely ridiculous and delightful, especially on the rooftops at the end. So how's that for an answer?
The thief is Cary Grant.
Yes, Cary Grant, and of course, Grace Kelly is the love interest. And yeah, I would watch it, excuse me, just for the French character actors alone. And a lot of times it looks like they may have hired villagers to come in and like hit him with a bunch of flowers when he crashed into the flower cart, but they're all just pitch perfect. So yeah, that's the one that jumps to mind when you ask that question, strangely.
That's what we're looking for is, you know, recommendations for, you know, movies from any time period, because everybody's got the time now to, you know, to actually go back and look at older things. And was that Hitchcock direct that?
I believe it was Hitchcock. Just the colors alone of VistaVision and Panavision, that alone. But God, it's funny. I'm halting. I don't know if it's Hitchcock. It sure seems like it would be.
It feels like Grace Kelly made more than one movie with him.
Rear Window and that. Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. All right. I like that recommendation. Makes me want to consider going back and looking at it again. I just watched Charade for the first time recently, and that movie's hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to buy Cary Grant in his 60s in a romance with Audrey Hepburn, but other than that, it's very enjoyable. George Kennedy has like a fake iron hand. And he's a bad guy, so there's a long fight scene between Cary Grant and George Kennedy in his fake hand. That's pretty good. Mike O'Malley, what about you? Can you recommend something?
Yes. Well, I can recommend a couple of things that I've seen recently. You know, I have three teenagers, 17, 16, and 13 and a half, and they are very interested in anime, and so we had pretty much watched all of Miyazaki's movies, which we absolutely love and have been telling, you know, other people about. But I think now they're all available on, I think, HBO Max, which if people haven't watched those films, they're just spectacular. Almost every one of them. I think the big American release that he did of a movie that Liam Neeson did a voice to was Ponyo, but I mean, all of them are just spectacular. And then we watched this film, which is apparently the, you know, the most highest grossing film in Japan, called Your Name, which again, I thought it was just, it was very sentimental. It was, I almost want to say it's a romance, but just really, really liked it. In addition to over the last few months, my wife and I had never seen Dr. Strangelove, and we just absolutely loved it. And then I had watched a couple of, I had watched Opening Night and The Killing of a Chinese Bookie from Cassavetes. So if you haven't seen any if anyone listening hasn't seen the Cassavetes movies, you should watch them. Dr. Strangelove, amazing. And I just think if you're into, you know, anime and you don't mind a sentimental movie, and that sounds diminishing to say it that way. It's a very sincere film. And I thought it was really romantic and great. Your Name.
All right, Sean.
I'm actually going to give you a current movie from this year.
Ooh.
Unlike these guys, I know this is going against the grain.
Dude, Your Name isn't that old. Okay. I mean, it might be about cartoons, but it's not that old.
Yeah. I loved this movie this year called Baby Teeth. Have you heard of this?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Aussie movie. Eliza Scanlon's in it, who we've seen her pop up in a lot of stuff. Like she was in Little Women and Sharp Objects, that HBO show. And she was in that Devil All the Time movie with Tom Holland. But it's just this, you know, it might be because it really, it's electric and chaotic in the way that maybe, I think some people write that Wayne is, and it probably is because of that, but it's about these, a girl who kind of falls in love for the first time through I don't want to give too much away, during a kind of tragic time. And it's about the four people dealing with that tragedy around her falling in love. And sometimes they, you know, face it with grace. Sometimes, most of the time, they act absolutely batshit crazy because they're all, you know, it's one of those movies where all the characters seem to be children to some degree. Even the adults, the people who are supposed to be holding it together the most, might be acting the worst. But it's an incredibly, incredibly, it starts out weirdly funny. Like the first 10 scenes of the movie, I was getting, as a writer, you get angry when they're so good. As you watch each one, you're just like, for some reason, the emotion is I'm pissed off that this is so fucking good and that it continues in every, it's the same way I felt about Hell or High Water, which is in my top 10. Every scene, my wife had to sit next to me as I audibly groaned in the movie theater after every scene because the scenes were so fucking good. I did it with this movie. It starts out in just this really electric, chaotic way with these really strange characters who are really in these really, really funny scenes. And everything is kind of off, feels off balance and a little chaotic, and you don't know quite why. And then it slowly builds into this really beautiful story about, you know, love and loss. And I'm confident in my masculinity enough to say I cried for like 10 minutes after it was over. Like it just destroyed me by the end. And, you know,
John, do men not have tear ducts? Did they not cry?
They don't cry, man. Come on. In Boston, we just punch. We just, you know.
You made me cry so much in Wayne. That's why I bring this up.
Yeah. Well, that's where I'm sad. I like sad shit, man. Like that's all that noise on top of Wayne, all the punching and the comedy and the blood and the noise and the people screaming at each other, because that's how I grew up. Everybody screaming. It's just covering all the sad shit that's there. You know, it's to kind of hide it so I don't feel like such a pussy. Sentimental and romantic. Like it really is so sentimental and romantic that, but I'm not comfortable because I'm from Boston, that I have to kind of.
Do you remember when politician, John Boehner, when he was crying all the time, like they kept. Right. Showing him crying. I'm starting to feel like, you know, at the time I thought it was kind of funny, but now I'm realizing that as a man of a certain age, there's just a point where you start crying about things, you know, yes. And it doesn't have to be things that are that terrible. Oftentimes it's a nice thing you're crying about, but it just starts happening, you know, and I think it's natural, and it certainly makes a lot of sense with the, vice principal in Wayne, he's going through a lot. So he's gets very,
there's a melancholy that sweeps over men past the age of 50 that I recognized in my dad when I was, you know, early 40s, late 30s. Cause my dad, he didn't say, I love you until I was maybe in my 30s. He said he would hang up phone calls by saying, keep smiling. And he knew that was his way of saying, I love you. But then like 60 hit and you'd walk into the room and be staring at the Christmas tree. And all of a sudden he'd be like, I'm just thinking about all the Christmases, you know, being with you boys. I was like, what the fuck is happening? This guy, I used to go watch this guy fight in the hockey rink and he's falling the fuck apart. And now I'm climbing into that.
I think being 6 years away from 60, when your father started looking at the Christmas tree and crying as we're about to decorate our Christmas tree at home, I think, you know, having kids, like you think about yourself. And if I was to think of myself, I don't know, pretty much like from my late 30s to right now, the day to day of what my life is pretty similar. I have kids, I go to work, but then you have these people who are hanging around you who are growing at this you know, fast pace, and they were just small 2 seconds ago. And now they're both, my sons are taller than me right now. And that just happened like in the last 6 months. And I just think that when you get to that age, like when you start to be 50 and then you get a little bit older, the passage of time is happening at such an accelerated rate. And then you start to see your friends and you're like, wow, that guy got old. And then you're realizing, oh, they're looking at me thinking the same thing. it's just terrible. It's just because it really just dawns on you. Oh my God, this is just happening so fast. How much more do I have to, you know? And that's why you're so grateful to be on a freaking great show, because it's just like, oh, you're younger, you're an actor. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. It's like, oh, I'm going to do all these great things. And then everything isn't great. All the people that you work with aren't great. And then you meet somebody like Sean and you get something that's really going, and you get to act with people like Mark and Sierra and Steven, and you just want it to go again. And you know, it's you know,
God. Such a great set, such a good group of people, such a great set. It was, you know, I very, you know, clearly walk into every room and go, there's no assholes here. There's no assholes ever here, you know, and give everybody, you know, a lot of chances because everybody fucks up, but it's it was a really great set.
For sure.
I wanted to mention the lady who plays Dell's mom. I keep saying that the performances are lived in, but she's like a full blown character, like immediately, and she's, you know, she doesn't have a lot of screen time, but tremendous impact. That whole Dell flashback episode is one of my favorite episodes in the series.
Yeah, it's kind of a secret weapon episode because it does something with Daddy in the middle that Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick are the guys who wrote the Deadpool movies and the Zombieland movies, which you talked about on your podcast recently. And Rhett always says that Daddy is a secret weapon in the show because you kind of sympathize with him at that point so much that it kind of leaves you even more off balance anywhere before that. So yeah, we love that episode, and Sierra's amazing, and Abigail is a total knockout in that. But yeah, you have this absurd, weird comedy, and then here comes this kind of devastating episode in the middle to kind of tell, it's kind of Dell's pilot. I always say there's a Wayne pilot and there's a Dell pilot. And Abigail's great in it.
All right. Well, we always play a game or two on Doug Lowe's movies. So I would love to run you guys through one if you'd like. And we can do that right after we do. I can't believe we've gone this far without taking a break. But I'm loving talking about this show and with you guys, and we'll be right back after some brief messages. No flipping.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
We're back. And I'd like to play a game. Are you guys all right with that?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I feel like this game that I put together, if I had to pick who I thought was going to do the best at it, I would say possibly Steven, because he's the one that, you know, said that he's recently watched a very old movie. And
he's going to beat me at anything. I'm terrible at games. So this should be fun.
How do you think you are at movie trivia, Mike?
I'm about to find out.
All right. Well, there's no prizes or anything. It's just for fun. It's a new game that I created just for you guys. And this special tribute to Wayne episode. And the game is called Which Wayne Is It? It's a multiple choice game, so everybody has a chance. I'll name a movie, and we'll go to you one at a time for the answers on this. I'll name a movie, and you tell me if it features John Wayne, Bruce Wayne, a.k.a. the original Batman, Adam West, or Wayne Newton.
Holy shit.
Yeah, John Wayne, Adam West, or Wayne Newton. I'll ask Stephen first, and then Stephen first was Flounder in Animal House. And then I'll go to, if Stephen misses, then it moves on to Mike, and he gets a shot. And if he misses, then Sean gets the gimme point, or the lucky point, because, you know, there's only three choices. And we continue on from there, and whoever gets 3 points first is the winner.
Let's go.
Let's do Stephen, this.
John Wayne. So you need to answer Wayne, West, or Newton.
Okay.
Who was in a film called Geronimo?
John Wayne.
That is incorrect. Oh, Mike. God. Between Adam West or Wayne Newton, who was in Geronimo?
Wayne Newton.
Also incorrect. Sean?
This is the only way I win the game, guys. The only way.
It might go your way just because. Because that's how it goes. What's your answer, Sean?
It's got to be Adam West, right?
Yeah, that's right. Some of my stoner friends went on that. I can't remember which ones were said already, so I use that answer. All right, so that means that Sean is on the board. He's got 1 point.
Was that the Geronimo? Was that the one with Wes Studi in it?
I don't think so. That sounds like a real Geronimo movie. This thing that Adam West was in sounds pretty silly.
Right.
As do most of these movies. I think that Adam West and John Wayne and Wayne Newton, they all have one thing in common, and that's they've all appeared in some really silly sounding movies. And I got one of those for you now. Steven, which one of those dudes was in Robinson Crusoe on Mars?
Okay. What? Robinson Crusoe on Mars. I'm going to have to guess that it was Adam West.
That is correct.
Yes. Easy one.
I was going to go with Wayne Newton on that to go really hammy.
Well, Mike, you get to go first on this next one. So maybe this one will be easy as well. Which one of those dudes was in a movie called Hell River?
John Wayne.
That's incorrect. Sean.
God, come on!
That's Wayne Newton, right? Name.
This is no joke, this game. This is a serious game you've created for us.
The game I watch him do every day in the morning on Twitter is the most difficult trivia game I've ever seen in my life.
This is serious. What a God, man.
It's Wayne Newton, right?
No.
What?
Wayne Newton is not in Hell River.
How do we have only three choices and we get two of us?
Yeah, Stephen, what's the remaining one?
Adam West.
That's correct. I don't
know. Stephen, you are so good at this game.
I know, you guys. I'm starting to feel bad. I'm so good at this.
Oh, my God. This isn't fair.
Yeah.
I mean, Adam West's voice in the Batman TV show, I'd say is, equally iconic to that of Stephen Geller in Wayne.
Truly.
True.
That's high grade. Right.
Come on, Mike. You can do this.
I got to get 1 point, for God's sakes.
Which one of those dudes was in a movie called Hell Riders?
John Wayne.
No.
God damn it.
You're preemptively upset that you missed?
No. Oh, did you? Was that right?
You want to change your answer?
No, I thought you said no.
That's wrong, Sean.
God damn. It's like you would think that every third movie John Wayne did had hell in it.
I know. Or a river.
Yeah. That was such a Boston response to preemptively say you failed before you've even gotten the answer. That's such a Boston attitude thing, as people who always think the ceiling's going to fucking cave in.
No, Sean, what the real Boston response, this is a stupid game. I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is not John Wayne. I'm going to go with Wayne Newton again. I want one of these to be Wayne. Is it Wayne Newton? No.
I mean, you know that Wayne Newton had a fairly limited career as an actor. Like, he usually either played himself or a guy who acted like Wayne Newton.
I can see him with an eye patch and a mustache and being in a movie called, what was it again? Hell on Wheels? What was
No, Hell Riders.
Riders.
Come on. He's in this. He's not in this.
No.
Hey, Steven, yeah. This is a good friend of mine.
Yes.
Okay. I need you to get this wrong so I can keep playing and not get skunked. Okay.
I don't think you have a chance.
Okay.
Pretend
okay, then,
as if you didn't hear what I said.
Okay. Then my guess is John Wayne.
Whoa, Steven, that's incorrect.
Ah, damn it. I thought for sure. Second time around.
Close. Yeah. Adam West is in Hell River and Hell Riders.
Oh, I've got your back, Mike.
Well,
all right, Mike.
I tip my hat to both of you gentlemen that as you're doing this interview, you're not sitting on IMDb trying to get these answers.
Yeah, we always have to tell the guests to
not cheat.
How many times do we just go 1, 2, 3, wrong, wrong, wrong? Like, I think we always picked the wrong answer almost three in a row, right?
Let's keep going. We, you know, Stephen blew it on that one. He was going to win, but he lost his chance. So we'll go back to you, Mike.
With honor, yeah.
Mike, which one of those guys was in Buckaroo the movie?
It's got to be Wayne Newton.
Incorrect.
I'm the worst contestant you've ever had on your podcast.
No, not even close. Sean, which one of the two remaining do you think it is?
I'm going to go with John Wayne.
You're going John Wayne?
Yeah, even though it's not mine.
I think the two of you just want to hand this thing to Steve.
How do we keep doing it? Like, it's flipping a coin and it's the opposite every time.
Well, it was Adam West again, because also a thing, if you've heard other episodes of Doug Loves Movies, I love to play these games where, and I just make it the same answer every time, and people still don't catch on. Because the answer's been West every time so far.
I was going to nail that algorithm game.
Yeah, and then I switch it up. I switch it up when people aren't expecting it.
I was on IMDb for a week. I was going to nail that algorithm game.
Yeah, that's for Steven and Mike don't know. I play a game based on the popularity algorithm on IMDb. And if you know that game is going to be played, you could actually, you could do a little research and studying as Sean clearly has. And, I apologize for that.
I did not.
But yeah, it just never ends with the movies that Adam West was in that sound like John Wayne movies. Riders of Destiny, Soldier in the Rain, wow. The Outlaws is Coming, which I don't even know what that's about to say. The Outlaws is Coming.
Crazy title. Really?
Yeah, Adam West was also in The Relentless Four. Wow. You know, they added four more dudes and became Hateful eventually.
I want to go back to this Outlaws. That's really the title. The Outlaws the title, is
yeah.
coming.
I looked at it a few times because I thought, that can't be right. The Outlaws is coming. So I guess maybe it's something said by a kid in the movie or something, like they don't understand.
In Brooklyn.
Yeah.
The Outlaws is coming.
I immediately just pictured every single person all the way from development stage to release to making the poster going, are you sure it's Outlaws is coming? We really want to go with this? It's all the way.
Yeah, Sean, it's a line of dialogue. The Outlaws is coming. Right? The guy says it. He says it six times. I keep telling you, the Outlaws is coming. You don't want to. Like, have you even watched the movie or you just work in marketing?
All right, I'll fucking print it. I'm going to print it, guy. All right, we're printing it.
Okay, now I want Mike to do a Buddy Hackett impression.
Oh.
I don't know Buddy Hackett. It sounds like it. I don't even know.
I don't even know Buddy Hackett. It just, oh, God. Just give me a line from It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, I guess.
Exactly. He's always saying, what's the name of, he's always saying somebody's name in that movie. It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Oh,
it's
God.
Really funny whenever he says it, like Erasmus or some name like that. Or maybe I'm thinking of The Music Man. All right. Well, congratulations to Steven. You really cleaned house on this one. You really, I didn't even need to go to, I always write a tiebreaker question. And I'll see if you guys know the answer to this. Of those
Adam West.
Oh, shit.
Guys, which one set sail on TV's Love Boat the most times?
Adam West.
It is indeed Adam West.
Yeah. Indeed.
It was always Adam West.
And he was only on it once. Wayne Newton and John Wayne never got on the Love Boat.
How Wayne Newton was never on the Love Boat is a either a testament to how much money he has and didn't need that he had bad.
Yeah, or maybe he had some beef with
Aaron Spelling.
Red Brandy.
Who's the guy who produced that show?
Aaron Spelling, maybe?
Yeah. Maybe he and Aaron Spelling had beef or something. Because, Wayne Newton seems perfect for The Love Boat.
Doug, what movie have you watched recently?
Yeah.
The one I've been talking up the most that I like a lot is, it's also on Prime, and it is called Uncle Frank.
Oh, yeah.
And it's written and directed by Alan Ball. And it's a period piece with Paul Bettany as a closeted gay man and having to deal with, whether or not to come out to his family.
He's so good in it. He is so unbelievably good in that
movie. You have seen it.
I have seen it. I think I saw it, watched it the night it came out. I was all on board from that trailer. The moment I saw the trailer, I was like, that's sad enough for me.
Yeah, and a terrific cast of some of the best character actors out there, like Steven Root and Margot Martindale. And
I always ask that question because I have a pet peeve about people who say, ask the question, like, what's your favorite movie? Okay, everybody, what's your favorite? But no one ever asked the person who asked the question.
Well, thank you for giving me another opportunity.
Uncle
Frank, which people should watch after they've seen all 10 episodes of Wayne.
That Sound of Metal movie on Amazon is also amazing.
Yeah. Does anybody have anything else that they would like to promote besides Wayne? Is anything else going on that people can check out, Steven?
This is going to sound really stupid. I can't talk about it, but I'm going to be doing something for Netflix Animation, but I can't talk about it. How about that? Is that sort of a non-plug? I'm still doing improvisation with my troops. So check out 3forall.com and then here in LA, Impro Theater improv theater. We're all trying to stay on our feet because live theater. So anyone who wants to check that out, and feel free to donate and support live theater here in LA.
Awesome. Mike?
I am currently getting ready for Snowpiercer season 2, which stars Jennifer Connelly and Sean Bean and David Diggs. I shot 2 seasons of that with a fantastic cast, and I had a great time working on the show. Great cast. Season 2, I think, premieres January 25th, and I'm show running a show for Stars called Heels, which is a story about a independent wrestling promotion in southwestern Georgia. And I've written myself, or I've cast myself in a part that was already written in that show. I get a small part in that, but I'm running that show, and it stars Stephen A. Mell, Alexander Ludwig, Mary McCormack, Chris Bauer, and just some great actors all through the cast. It's just it's been a really fun show. That's an hour-long drama for Stars that we hope will launch sometime in the summer of 2021.
But you are available to continue to appear on Wayne when that goes into back into
100%. We stop. We will be done with hopefully Snowpiercer. Snowpiercer is coming back for season 3, but I am. I text Sean every other day. When is this thing going? I love the part of Tommy Cole. I love this cast. I love the show. But you know, most importantly, as an actor, you're looking for writers that you can just love their mind and love their sense of humor and love what they want to write about and the style. And, you know, everything about Wayne is it all came together. And so, yeah, I'll move heaven and earth to do that again.
And they shot 2 seasons of Snowpiercer out of the gate. I never heard that it was guaranteed 2 seasons.
Yeah, well, it was the first season, and then I think as a result of the work, and I think that it's also, you know, it's very, very expensive to build all those sets. And the first season had sold internationally and is doing – it's internationally, it's on Netflix. And, you know, there's – I think that, you know, for certain – shows that are in this genre, there's a built-in audience of people where, you know, obviously the IP was, or, you know, was in, and the fact that it was based on an awesome movie had people interested in it. It's obviously you're going to take those hits, you know, and then after he, you know, the one that won the Oscar, they're like, oh, wow, this is, you know, people are going to be more interested, and people started watching Snowpiercer, the movie, even more. And so, But you know, Graham Manson, who is the showrunner on that show, who he created Orphan Black, he's just a great writer, great showrunner, and I think they really had belief in his vision.
And managed to stick around, unlike another network that just couldn't even continue to exist just to keep Wayne going.
I keep telling myself, like, ah, oh, shit, man, dude, I don't want to be canceled twice. Like, as much as, like, there were no expectations going into Amazon, I was, now that we're starting to feel some positive stuff going on, I'm like, God, I could also be canceled twice for the same season of television, which is really fucked up.
Was YouTube, I feel like they were pretty hands-off, though, with you and that season that you did with them.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, I mean, Steven's speech at the in 10, that really long speech,
yeah,
was, Steven, was that 5 pages at one point?
It was something really crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
We went to a table read and he read a 5-page speech, and I just sat there going, are they going to stop me? Like, when's the network going to come in and go, this can't be, like, I, you know, my big Western speech that the guy gives before all the shit goes down, you know, for a half hour comedy, it's fucking insane. So, but they never said it. And it's just an example of the way they treated me and they treated the show from the get, which they loved it from the get. They knew it was different and they let me make the show that I wanted to make, and all of us make the show they wanted to make. And, you know, we would get three notes and a compliment on every script. I felt like they had a notepad that only had three lines on it. because it was just like, okay, right, I only have this room to fill up. Because I started laughing towards the end. I'm like, that's three notes in a... So they didn't notice the death at all. And they're really... I mean, that's kind of the benefit of being kind of a Virgin Network who, you know, unlike others who develop you to hell, you know?
Yeah.
And make a weird show.
Whatever happens next, the result is you should all be very proud of that one season. And I'm going to watch it again. It's just so good.
Thanks, man.
And
I really appreciate you all.
Thank you all for joining me on my little movie show. And
thank you, Doug.
Anytime anybody wants to come back to promote all these upcoming things, just holler at me. And I usually end episodes of this show lately by saying the last line, like a classic last line from a movie. But today I'd like to close it with the final words that are spoken in the last episode of Wayne. I don't think it gives anything away, but that's what I'm going to do. Thanks again, guys. And thanks for listening, everybody. And as always, the fuck you looking at, bitch?
Now it's time for Doug to watch another talkie. Eyes of gold, his viewing prowess makes him cocky. There's no room in his heart for you, 'cause Doug loves movies.